unprecedented situation demand unprecedented action. At a time when COVID-19 has literally brought the country to a standstill, domestic startups are trying their best to innovate and survive this crisis. But the question is, how will they manage to reacquire the market when the consumer pattern and the way businesses was done is about to change completely? Hello and welcome to Money Control. This is Priyanka Sahai, special correspondent, and you are tuned into Setting Sail, our weekly podcast that dives through the changing landscape of the entrepreneurship ecosystem and the challenges within. And today we have with us Sameer Nigam, founder and chief executive officer of PhonePe, a Walmart-based financial technology firm. Hi, Sameer. Thanks for joining in.
Hi, Priyanka.
Okay, Sameer. So, you know, PhonePe recently introduced stores where users can actually go and order groceries from the neighborhood stores. This hasn't quite been your core business so far. Now, what led to this development at this point in time?
Actually, stores has been live on PhonePe for over a year. We took a bet on the need to connect Kirana stores and small businesses to consumers directly in 2018, and I've been working ever since. It's definitely, to your point, not one of the primary use cases on PhonePe yet, but that obviously got accelerated quite a bit during coronavirus, during the lockdown. Our view is that India's backbone, retail backbone, is the 95% of the unorganized market, which is catering to everyone in the rural areas, tier 2, tier 3, tier 4, and beyond. And it's high time that they got connected to the digital ecosystems as well. Remember, majority of these shop owners and users have gone digital themselves only in the post-Jio era in the last 3 or 4 years. So before that, in fact, connectivity itself was a problem. During the lockdown, what's been fascinating is the different types of interactions that one is seeing with one's local grocers, local pharmacies, and beyond. There's been an absolute explosion in both need and desire by people to find shops that are delivering to their household, by trying to find what inventory is available at the local vegetable vendor. So we are doing our part with stores, since we already had the mapping, since we already had the classification of about 10 million merchants, said, okay, why not try and find out who's open for business during the lockdown? What are their hours? What's the delivery? We launched Khata so that shopkeepers can actually lend to their or give products against a credit line to their local customers. A lot of innovation happening. It's just got accelerated, tremendously accelerated.
There's also been some tie-ups that you've had with some hyper-local delivery firms. Can you elaborate on that? And, you know, how do we see, I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of these companies at some point in time would have been either your competitors or, you know, rival investors would have invested in these companies. How does this work, these collaborations work at this point in time?
As far as the merchant network, we've got about 8,000 people today. They're all still, by the way, on roll. 8,000 employees that go out there in the market across more than 500 cities now and first acquire the merchants for digital payments on PhonePe. Then we actually train or educate them on the services that we offer, the PhonePe for Business app, Khata, operating like a PhonePe ATM, how to catalog their data and make it available on the PhonePe app. So that work's actually largely been ours. Where a couple of interesting partnerships are being explored is startups that do last mile delivery, pick up from a shop and deliver to the consumer's house. We've been talking to Swiggy Go and a couple of other companies. These are not companies we ever competed with or ever planned to compete with either. We're not in the business of heavy logistics. So that's not competition. It's natural allies that we're just sort of working with.
Okay. And if I were to understand, how has this pandemic changed the way people made payments?
So I break it down into 3 parts. The first, obviously, is seeing unprecedented high levels of new users because, especially during the first and second lockdown, people are stuck at home. Then delivery and digital services are their only real option, right? So a lot of, like, millions of people last month installed the PhonePe app and are trying to do their first digital payment, which is, I think for us as an industry, a healthy sign regardless. I think like demonetization, sometimes artificial triggers create an environment that becomes lasting. So we hope that India's march towards sort of 1 billion people doing digital payments is just going to accelerate even further from here on. The second is in terms of what grew and what degrew. So all digital categories, mobile recharges, all your bill, utility payments, bill payments, financial services, digital gold purchase, digital gaming, education, content subscription, all of those are at absolute highs. So never seen these volumes. Correspondingly, anything that involves either e-commerce or offline retail, those two verticals the most severely hit during the lockdown. At peak, offline was down about 75%. Good news is, in the third lockdown, once the green zones have opened up, we are seeing a very rapid recovery.
35% is PhonePe transaction that you're talking about. And this would primarily be the transactions that user make while they are at the shop, more of an O2O strategy that PhonePe has.
So the in-store transactions and in-transit transactions, right? Ola and Delhi Metro and Mumbai Metro and all of these type of transactions, they've all obviously at a standstill. So those, then e-commerce, Flipkart and Myntra and then Swiggy and Zomato and those kind, they were all at a standstill. So anything which involved either e-commerce or offline transactions was very, very low activity levels. Not zero, by the way, which was interesting. We were still doing over 1 million in-store transactions during the lockdown, surprisingly. We're still analyzing where this was happening, but largely groceries and pharmacies.
Even after the lockdown is lifted, social distancing is pretty much going to be the new norm. We are not going to see crowded marketplaces. We are not going to see grocery store completely filled with consumers. So where and how are you predicting a correction of that sort will happen that immediately? What's the strategy going forward?
So I think let's look at the verticals again, right? As far as e-commerce delivery-based models, whether it's food delivery or it's product delivery, the minute the government allows for those to open up, they have never been a function of crowds. So if someone's ordering items at home, again, a Swiggy or a Zomato or a Fresh Menu or any of these guys, to the house, that's not impacted by social distancing. It has been impacted more with availability of service. Same with e-commerce. So I think those will bounce back to their original levels as long as the consumer demand is there. That's the variable. If people are spending, these models can bounce back to 100%, perhaps higher. The offline world again, I think the malls and the large crowded places may hurt a little more, but petrol pumps have to open up again if people start going back to work. The smaller shops will open up, and I think again, our network is so distributed. When you talk about 10 million retail stores or kiranas, we're covering everything from the street momo vendor to a really, really big franchise multinational. So I think we are spread evenly enough where we will have our market come back to normalcy regardless of social distancing. I don't worry too much about social distancing per se.
Okay, I get it. At this point in time, would it be okay if you could give us a breakup of the so-called offline versus online sale that was generated via PhonePe earlier and the way it is going to change once, you know, things come back to how it used to be previously, the sense that once e-commerce opens up in full capacity or once the lockdown is lifted?
See, on that one, unless the government plays spoiler, I believe e-commerce will keep growing. It was growing despite COVID. In fact, during COVID, we were one of the very, very few countries in the world where strangely e-commerce was not allowed and the lockdown on retail stores got lifted earlier. It's a weird place from a market standpoint. I think e-commerce comes back stronger than before. I think sector by sector, some of the businesses will have to reinvent themselves quite a bit, especially I think on the food delivery network, where the underlying restaurants may be out of business, 10, 20, 30%. So if your business is heavily affected by availability of things like restaurants, you're not affected. If it's a cloud kitchen model, you'll do well. Similarly, if I take Ola and Uber, as long as the drivers are available, and I think they will be, right now it's a very temporary situation, but people need jobs, so people will come back. So once the drivers come back, and people need to actually, I think all those businesses bounce back and hard. I'm an eternal optimist. I believe that people want to work, people don't want to be sitting jobless, and therefore I think market forces will meet coronavirus and reinvent themselves.
That's quite optimistic of you to say that. And also what in my previous question I wanted to understand was the breakup of the business PhonePe is expecting to be getting from the offline stores as compared to the business it expects to get from the online business, the e-commerce business.
Offline for us, in terms of volume of transactions, not revenue, I won't speak to that, but volume of transactions, offline is about 3 times larger than all of online put together, right? Just given again, how much India shops offline. I think as far as digital payments is concerned, both will grow actually, because we are a sunrise industry, right? So numbers for all the key players who are willing to actually put people on the ground in the offline world, they've just been growing exponentially for the last 2 years, 3 years. And I don't see any reason why both numbers will not grow rapidly from here. Will there be a rebalancing at the PhonePe level? I'd be surprised, because if e-commerce grows, let's say 20% compared to their baseline or 30%, we'll obviously participate. But I also think that in offline, we will keep acquiring more merchants and in the offline environment, to something you said earlier, because social distancing norms are there, people don't want to use cash. So even in the shops where we were seeing maybe 10 or 20 digital transactions a day, I expect that that number will jump up and become more than 50% of the transactions at a shop will become digital very soon in the next year or two.
Okay. Good. You know, PhonePe recently received a fresh capital infusion of $90 million from Flipkart. Where is this capital being deployed? Is this a war chest which we can see being prepared ahead of global company like WhatsApp getting into India and commercially launching their payment services?
So in fact, the last tranche was $30 million and it's just a regular monthly or bi-monthly tranche. If you see, we draw down money against our plans every quarter or every couple of quarters, depending on the environment or the need. So this was very much a business as usual downstreaming of funds. We're still growing very, very aggressively in terms of our sales force, in terms of our product solutions. We're still rolling out lots of new financial services. So there's a cost. As far as this being a war chest to combat WhatsApp, I think said this at multiple forums. First, until they launch, I don't know what they're coming at us with. So really doesn't make sense to draw down money just for that. Second, I'm actually, again, the eternal optimist that I am. I'm not so worried about WhatsApp or anyone else. I'm more worried about the market. I think the market's large enough for all of us to play. Digital payments penetration in India is barely about 11%. We have miles to go. Developed countries like Germany are touching 80% penetration today. And India leapfrogs markets. We've seen this in telecom with 4G. We've seen this in so many sectors. I think right now the thought is, how do we invest? Where do we invest? How do we keep growing really fast? And how do we reach profitability? I think the competitive view is overhyped. Never seen anyone become a successful business because they only look at competition. You got to look at your customers and your merchants. That's it.
A year down the line, profitability was not something a lot of digital startups were actually talking about. But I've noticed that since the last 6-7 months, suddenly profitability has become the core attention of most of the companies. Why has that happened all of a sudden?
I think a couple of reasons, and I'm glad it's happened, by the way. For what it's worth, we talked about the fact that we'd want to target profitability in an IPO in 2023. Way back in 2018, I think it was with, on Economic Times or one of these online TV channels, and we talked about a five-year journey to profitability and IPO. I think for too long, startups have been focused only on growth in India and growth at all costs because competition is fierce, right? India is a very open market. So you got every single multinational player, every large industrial house in India, everyone competing for the same piece of the pie. So it is a very brutally competitive market. Having said that, unless your business is fueling your growth at some point early in your life cycle, it becomes very, very hard to ever become profitable. And I think we have a lot of businesses that are vulnerable that way. And that's why I think even during COVID, business models do need to change fast. Last 6-7 months, what changed was the global environment, right? The markets were becoming bearish. The global venture capital and private equity markets were starting to dry up sector by sector, especially the sort of SoftBank related fiascos of WeWork and Uber and all of these other issues that they were having. So when really large PE funds, VC funds start becoming bearish, large startups start floundering, the IPO markets punish you, then it's back to the basics. And I think 2019 marked moment for Indian startups, because I think sustainable growth became the mantra instead of just grow at all costs. COVID just accelerated that. I don't think COVID would have done it in of itself. I think people are just saying, okay, how deep is the Indian market? Can you actually ever really make money? Why is it important to own 50% market share when, let's say, there's two players and neither is making money, right? You know, you see the sector by sector. Ola, Uber, very large concentration in that space. Both should be making profit. Swiggy, Zomato, Flipkart, Amazon, whatever sector you take, one where they've reached scale. Normally, businesses should be making money. Very few Indian startups were, and that has to stop.
Interesting. So would you agree if I were to say that at this point in time, startups should wake up to the fact that profitability is something they just can't ignore?
Rather, better late than never. Any startup that thought that profitability is not important has always been in trouble, right?
That's very interesting of, you know, a tech startup himself saying something on these lines. It's actually very valid, especially during the time that you're living in, as well as, you know, what you rightly pointed out was people started waking up from their dreams, especially with the Uber crisis in the IPO market that has happened, the WeWork issue that on a global level that took place. So I think it's high time that those who have still not realized maybe this COVID issue can give them another jerk and things come back to the old basics.
I think it's inevitable, by the way. I don't think anyone's at fault, by the way. I think if the early sort of entrepreneurs, the guys who created this market, Sachin and Binny and Mukesh Bansal and Vijay and others who entered, if they hadn't actually created very, very large businesses, I think the global investment community would not be looking at India and saying, hey, we want to invest in the market here. I don't think the likes of Reliance and the Birlas and the Tatas and all the domestic houses would be investing in so much in their sort of new age plays either. So unprecedented growth and job creation that happened in the e-commerce world and fintech world now, I think has absolutely been required. It's the stimulus to actually better things happening. But yes, somewhere in there, profitability got lost as a narrative. And I think it's just coming back into the narrative.
Absolutely. And given the limited investor interest that India is bound to become, I mean, at this point in time, given the limited investor interest, India is expected to become a hotbed of distressed assets. Now, given your position, will PhonePe be interested in bailing out some of these startups? What is your appetite for acquisitions in the market right now? And if so, what sort of startups will you be looking at?
So, one, our appetite remains unchanged. But two, our philosophy also remains unchanged. And the philosophy is, you don't acquire to, if you're building a platform play, as opposed to a, like if I were in an offline world and I owned a coffee store and I got 100 customers and there was a competitor who had 30 customers coming and they had a coffee store, you could acquire and say, you know, I have 130 customers. That doesn't work well in the tech world when you're building platforms. So we can't invest in acquiring people for their consumer base, right? So that I think a very important...
That's a complete no-no.
It doesn't make any sense. We have 200 million customers. Let's say we acquired somebody and they had 100 million customers. How do I merge populations? You can't do that. And there'd likely be a healthy overlap of customers. So that math never works out well. I've seen it over and over. I still believe that's just poor math. Two, very rarely I've seen two unprofitable businesses merge and become profitable. Right now, in fact, you should be making every penny work harder so that we achieve profitability. Why would I load on distressed assets? Having said that, what we will look out for, and I think down markets are a good time to look out for, is exceptional talent. We are hiring. We're hiring both at the senior and the junior levels at a breakneck speed right now because there's really good talent and many don't have jobs or think they won't have jobs soon either way. Second, there are good startups in the early stage building IP in areas that are interesting to us, whether it's MSME solutions, whether it's advertising solutions, whether it's financial service solutions. These are typically teams of anywhere between 5 to maybe max 50 people. We look at those for the IP that they're creating and try and see if we can actually acquire, merge and enable them. But those are very opportunistic in terms of finding the right talent. It has very little to do with their business per se. We're large enough where we can invest behind what we want to. We're fortunate enough where we have long-term investors behind us. So I don't think distressed assets, especially competitors. I think that's the question you were really asking. People in digital payments, for example, if you'd acquire them, no.
Which brings me to my another question. You very rightly pointed out that there'll be exceptional talents, unfortunately, who will be there in the market. And I think it's a very smart move if you're geared up to sort of acquire that talent in form of hiring in your company. We are seeing layoffs happening across multiple companies in the startup space. What is your suggestion to these companies? And, you know, at this point in time, when we already have a health crisis going on, will an employment crisis bring any relief to the ecosystem?
Well, this one's tricky, right? Because it depends on the stage of the company. So being on a bunch of podcasts and webinars with the startups, early stage startups, I believe that they should shave every non-essential cost that they can, but try and keep their employees with them, because they're typically, you're talking about 12, 15 member teams, right? Very early stage startups. Those startups that survive typically become the hotbed for innovation and the markets rebound. I started my first venture right after the market collapse in 2009. I joined my first company after the dot-com burst. I was in California in 2001. And I'll never forget, I mean, I joined a company which had 500 employees. They kept laying off till we were about 80 people. But that company, once it was 80 people, was an unstoppable force, because, and we became very, very profitable over the next 2 or 3 years. There are two problems to be solved. You keep your company alive and you keep your employees. I think if you've taken investor money, solving the first is your fiduciary job. So you've got to figure out how to keep the company alive. And I think we should not be judging people for having to lay off, as long as they're doing it empathetically and they're doing it as a last resort. I don't think firing people first is a good thing societally. I think it will create a lot of problems. But as long as people have tried everything else, they've stopped having office parties and wasteful expenses, everything that is non-essential, as we call it, is out the window. After that, if you still need to lay off people for the business to stay viable, I think that's fair. I think that's the right thing to do. If companies don't survive, future employment also won't happen. Having said that, for example, in our case, we've taken the view, and I think a lot of larger companies should do the same. We took a view that we will not fire a single employee, including the guy who serves coffee in the office. We just will not fire people. And we will use those same people working from home to just focus for 90 days on accelerating every other type of automation we could imagine that was already in the roadmap. But typically, cost conservation projects happen in parallel with growth projects, marketing initiatives, launches. We just said, okay, let's start focusing on the cost saving a little more than we were previously by getting the employees to stay on roll and build those solutions. I think you can find that middle ground if people try hard enough.
Which makes sense, which brings me to my last question. At this point in time, when there is financial crisis in the market, what sort of government support are you expecting being a startup? And how do you think government, if at all, can incentivize these startups?
Especially in our category, honestly, I think we shouldn't be asking for government support, because digital payments is in a purple patch. It has been for a long time now, actually. Government's done everything in its power to promote digital payments regardless. What I would look for is unblocking of a few critical regulations and policies, both from the financial regulators and the government, fast-tracking them. And I'll give simple examples. Over the last 3 or 4 years, lot of KYC-related madness in the market. Finally, we have video KYC being approved by various regulators. We have limited KYC or min KYC norms. I think if we can just get to a paperless, non-physical contact method, the markets open up, not just payments, mutual funds, insurance, and all these sectors. So I think time for a bunch of high impact policy clearances to come in, so that we don't have to deal with unnecessary growth inhibitors. And that's something that I think is a fair ask of the government at any point of time, same with the regulators. But I would not ask for any financial bailout. I think it's the other way around. I think the government is spending more than a normal $3 trillion GDP government can on a lockdown this extreme. Their money should be going on the DBT programs and resurrecting the MSME market. I don't think we have any leg to stand on in terms of asking them for any bailouts.
All right, then. On that note, I would like to thank you, Sameer, for being there with us today.
Thank you. Thanks, Priyanka.
So that's all that we have for this episode of Setting Sail. Meanwhile, if you have any comments or queries, you can write on to us. Our email ID is ncpodcast@nw18.com. You can also follow us on Twitter with our user IDs @moneycontrol.com and @PriyankaSahai. Till then, for more news, views and updates, stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.